We're on a mission to help founders hit product market fit faster. We do this by interviewing founders that have been there. I'm your host, Adam O'Donnell. This podcast is put together by Zendesk for Startups. We offer 6 months free of Zendesk customer support suite for qualified product-oriented companies. Kind of what you're working on and any like highlight investors that you've already had on your cap table.
Hey, Adam. Well, thank you for having me first. And we're Exponential Fi. We started a company about 3 years ago, 12 people, plus a few consultants. And we are a decentralized finance investing platform, drastically simplifying access to DeFi so crypto holders can earn yield in a simple, safe way. And we raised the 14 million seed round about 3 years ago, led by Paradigm, as well as 80 plus notable investors, Circle, Solana, Polygon, and a variety of like really, really cool angels. And yeah, that's us in a nutshell.
Very cool. Definitely check it out on Crunchbase. I was impressed with some of your investors as well. And thanks for sharing that. Help us before you get into your product market fit journey, because to go in 3 years to where you are is pretty amazing. Can you tell me, and yeah, by the way, I like that because it is fresh on your mind. A lot of founders we talked to, it took a little bit longer to get there. But could you tell us a low moment that you had in the early days or just a couple of years ago where you maybe thought you're going to have to shut the company down or you just didn't know if you could do it anymore to really connect with founders who are in that right now?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the lows are low, the highs are high. A lot of founders say that and it's true. I think a low moment was crypto winter hit us, right? And they were all of these bankruptcies and issues happening in crypto, which you've seen, and that created a very like cool. It's winter, as we call it, cold environment, effectively, and we were like facing some massive headwinds, effectively back then, and so that was for me what I would call a low moment there. But what we did is we turned it around by saying, hey, it's winter, quote unquote, let's just go heads down and build a great product with a small set of customers and keep iterating and learning and throughout this. And that's just what we did. And we also changed a little bit our product strategy as a result, and I'm happy to elaborate on that.
Well, I can't wait to pull that apart around the product market fit, but help me with, because I think that's easier said than done. I think you're listening to the podcast and you're like, oh, of course, I just need to go heads down and ignore the haters or even the fear. But how did you handle, even in your own mind, or maybe people close to you who are like, hey, like, are you sure we're heads down on the right thing? Or yeah. These, you know, this industry is going to continue to grow?
Yeah, I mean, on that, I don't think we've lost conviction. Because if you lose conviction, it's a pretty fundamental thing. So I think we still believed in the ecosystem. Decentralized finance is an incredible ecosystem. It allows you to essentially perform jobs as a user that banks do and get the value, which is the yield. It's about financial freedom. So, and it's built for an innovation. There are hundreds of protocols and blockchains and so on and so forth. And so when that happened, like fundamentally, you got to believe in the core and keep that conviction. Now, where it gets rough is like how to get there. What's the right product? What's the right way for us to give access to that ecosystem in a way that makes sense? And it's all about pushing through and having those candid, very open discussions, especially as a co-founding team. One thing that helped significantly is there are three of us. We're three co-founders. And so being able to have those discussions in tough times with other people makes the journey a little easier. Like I have a lot of friends who are solo founders, for example, and it's hard. It's harder because like you can't pick up the phone at 10 p.m. when you have a like a worry or an idea or something you're worried, like you're like spinning in your mind. Here, when you have a like two other co-founders, you can. And oh, if someone is a little bit down, the other person can pick up the slack and so on and so forth. So I think that was also a key part in here. Yeah.
I love that. At the end of the day, though, if you lose conviction, you should probably stop, is what I'm hearing. But if you
That's
have
right.
it, keep going. That's great. Well, let's work backwards from the moment that you felt like you had hit product market fit. If you could
Yeah.
tell us where you were, what the month was, like anything else around that.
Well, okay. So, during winter, as I was mentioning, what we did is we focused on the fundamentals. So our vision is build an access layer to DeFi, make investing in DeFi really easy, make earning yield on crypto, which is compounding plus yield equals financial freedom, really easy. Now, I wasn't comfortable letting people invest without them understanding what they're investing in and what risk they're taking. And so we were doing user research before building the product. And a prospective customers was our office back then in San Francisco, Market Street. And he was a DeFi investor. He had a lot of crypto. He was pretty successful. Came in, sat down, and he looked at our risk framework. So we grade things from A to F. Think of it as Moody's for DeFi with a lot of data. And then, so we're talking, yeah, does it make sense? How do we build this thing? How do we assess risk? Like all these good questions. And he's looking at the screen at some point and he sees like one of the protocols and it has a big F on it. F is like the lowest grade. It means you're probably going to lose your money, meaning it has risks similar to what brought down some of the protocols and the big stories you've heard. And he looks at it and he keeps saying, that's an F. And I'm like, yes, that's an F. And here's why. It has what's called debt spiral risk. That's like the fancy name for it, which means that similar to what happened in the past, your crypto, the smart contract can essentially lead to total principal loss. And he looks at it, he's like, that's an F. And I'm like, yeah, that's an F. And he keeps saying that three or four times. He's like, I have like seven figures in that thing. And then he's like, I need to go. And he was running away of the office to go exit that position, right? And then we're like, okay, that's interesting. We this is a sign of product market fit. And so we instead of building the investment platform in winter, we're like, no one wants to invest. Like everyone was like really cold and scared. And we built a risk platform and we needed to build that anyways. And I talked to a friend and he's like, why don't you build this thing? Why don't you rate people's wallets? I'm like, that's interesting. So we built this growth feature called Rate My Wallet. And you can just enter your crypto wallet and it gives you a really nice report with like your grades on like how much risk you're taking. This is an A, this is a B, this is a C and stuff, right? And then we launched this thing and like 3 weeks later, there is 23 billion rated through Rate My Wallet. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. It looks like people want to know their exposure, what risk they're taking, and so on and so forth. So that was a really cool sign of early product market fit for our risk product.
It hindsight 2020, because I'm like, how could this not work? It sounds amazing. Help me
Yeah.
with, did you get the, but obviously there's way more to it. I'm curious, because did people not question your rating and like how you made the rating? Did, like that first story in person, did they not have that question when they saw F?
Yeah, they did. What's interesting with our ratings is it's not just a blanket rating and you figure it out. We have a very detailed report around it where you can look at every metric that backs the rating. And so you see it with colors. We did that in the UX. So if it's a B, you see like five things that are greens and two, three things that are yellow, and you open and you're like, okay, this protocol has been launched 3 months ago, so it's risky. It doesn't have a lot of audits, and the auditors are not valid. And it's structurally has some issue with collateralization, for example, if it's a lending protocol. I'm just giving you an example. Then, okay, here is why it's a B or why it's a C. And so we make that very transparent. It's like it's a very open risk framework, effectively. Yeah.
Got it. So yeah, you're pulling behind the curtain. So they're building that trust, but you're able to quickly do it and opening up that Rate My Wallet feature, which was that free?
Yeah, free. Absolutely. Yeah. It was a free, again, the risk platform, I'm talking a lot about it, is more a fundamental thing. It's not the core product. The core product is about investing and earning yield, right? Which we launched after, and I'm happy to talk to you about product market fit for that product specifically, which is a whole other thing. But we used our risk framework to help investors make the right decision, and also as a way to generate interest and growth. So people who used Rate My Wallet, some of them converted to becoming investors, for example. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And just so I get a perspective, like what percentage of your customers come in through Rate My Wallet? Like if you had to give a rough, like, you know, 5%, 1%, 50%.
It's a small amount. So we used it as an initial, it's like in the less than 5% range, basically. We used it as a growth mechanism initially when we first started the company. And the learning there is people who use Rate My Wallet are DeFi native. So they already have a wallet. They already know how to do it. Our customers are new to DeFi. We're here to bring the next wave of investors into crypto and earning yield on crypto. And so that's why the conversion rate there was lower, because it's not the same audience. And so we have to find other mechanisms, other channels to like find just regular people who maybe hold some crypto and want to earn yield. Yeah.
I love that. So it's like you had a growth hack in the early days that worked really well, but it wasn't as effective as a percent, like in terms of the ratio of ideal customers, even though it like did help with the brand and it was obviously something you'd do again.
That's right. Exactly. And so now we're trying to think, well, what's the equivalent of that, but for a regular investor? And we're throwing our ideas around there. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's really cool. So yeah. Then after you launch Rate My Wallet, tell me about like your journey to product market fit with the main product.
Yeah. So we've launched the risk product. We spend a good year on that. It's become a reference in DeFi. Then we launched our investment product and started effectively onboarding friends and family first. We spent a year iterating and battle testing the protocol. And so there are two things that are really important. One, keep my funds safe. So a big investment in security, more than any other startup, than the average startup, I would say, just because of everything that happened in crypto. So we really invested in that upfront. And then two, with a small set of friends, family, and investors, we started iterating on the platform. We did hundreds of interviews and we kept on collecting feedback to like get the platform to what we call not an MVP, but an MLP, a minimum lovable product. And we got there effectively. So over the course of the year, we built a small base. So that was the first 1,000 customers, effectively, a small base of really engaged users. They love the platform. Once they start investing, they place six trades in the first 6 months. That's like one trade a month. They keep on like adding on more money, trying on different opportunities. The NPS on that thing is 68, which is for a startup, pretty good, right? And so, and we essentially solved from a product market fit perspective, the stickiness and the I love this product problem. What we haven't solved yet, and we're working on it, we're starting to solve it over the past few months as we came out of beta, is the top of the funnel. Let's now we have a sticky product. We have a lovable product. Let's bring in more people into it. But I can deep dive into the first phase, and then we can talk about the more recent phase on the acquisition side. Yeah.
I love that. I mean, just getting to a 68 NPS, I know takes a lot of time. How long did you actually build on the core product, would you say?
About a year. Yes, it took us it took us about a year in like beta, quote unquote, with a few not a few a good amount, like in the hundreds of customers to help us build that. And to be honest, we had a good jump start. So this whole company started, I haven't told you that story because that feeds into the product market fit journey, started 3 years ago. My co-founder Mehdi was managing eight figures for friends and family, right? And he was helping them invest in crypto. So it became kind of a pseudo fund, effectively. His LPs were friends and family, and he was helping them move to DeFi to earn yield. Great. Why? Because they're passive investors, they're long-term holders of ETH Bitcoin, and it makes sense. You wouldn't let your dollars sit idle, so you want to put your ETH and Bitcoin and earn yield on it. And DeFi allows you to do that. Same thing. And DeFi is very, very hard to use. Like 20 steps to place a trade, unless like you're a pro, very, very hard to use. And so he had this crazy spreadsheet to track performance. He was like securing a dozen wallets with keys. He was bridging $1 million across clunky interfaces. I don't know if you've tried to do a bridge in crypto land. It's like you send $1 million in website, suddenly it starts bugging, and you're like hoping they will show up on the other side. Bridging means from one blockchain to the other, basically. And so he was dealing with all of that. I was like, hey man, you're managing eight figures this way. We gotta productize what you're doing. And so that's how we started the company. And so the same base that was like friends and family investing there, he brought over to the platform, and they were like our initial investors. And then we added more as well through networking and so on and so forth. And also organically, like some users we just met through like connections or on LinkedIn and et cetera. And they came in into the platform. But it was a very like hands-on. Hey, here is the target customer we're looking for. Where do we find those? Go make some calls, ping people on LinkedIn, talk to friends. They were also friends and family, and initial investors were also referring more people, which was a good sign. And that's how we bootstrapped the thing. Yeah,
that is really cool. And so you basically took his manual process and tried to make it as fast and easy as possible, and stayed really close.
Yes, exactly. So we took his manual process and just built software and a great UX and a great product around it. Yeah,
I know I'm simplifying it here, but still, I appreciate the simplicity of that, because we all have those things in our lives where we're trying to hack something to make it work. And it just, as founders, I think the challenge is being able to spot those. And then also knowing, even though there is someone who's hacking a system together, that doesn't mean it's also a good business opportunity. So I don't know if you have any perspective on that, on how you, maybe it's just you had conviction in the fundamental problem.
Yeah. I had conviction when I saw it, because the level of pain is like on a scale from 1 to 10 is like 15 when you trade on DeFi. Like it's really hard. The first thing you got to do is to secure a decentralized wallet. It's 24 words that you have to shard in three and put in three different locations to secure your funds, essentially, your millions of dollars type of deal. And so you've already lost 99% of human beings, right? And so imagine doing that for like a bunch of LPs. Yeah, And question, where are the keys? Yeah, third is in France, in Paris, at my aunt's house, and a third is here with me, and a third is somewhere in a bank in a safety deposit box. And I'm like, okay, cool. And this is one wallet. Like, imagine if you have a bunch of them, right? So, and so this is like the first pain point, and then you keep on going. 20 steps to execute a trade. Yeah.
So that I love the simplicity of it. You understand the problem so well. Help me with when you were coming out of beta and you were first starting to show what you had built. What was that process like, maybe the first couple of weeks?
Yeah. So it wasn't just the first couple of weeks. It was for the entire year. We get on the Zoom, we demo the product. And typically if you're a crypto holder, you get really, really excited because you have ETH and, you're typically staking it. It's giving you 3% at best. And you look at it and you're like, oh, cool. I can choose my risk and I can get 8 or 10% or 15% or even 40% if I want to, depending on the risk level. Right. And people like get super excited. And we start then right after they usually self-serve onboarding. In the initial product, you get 1 million questions like, how does this work? And then that's the feedback. So you get on a follow-on Zoom and you go through it and you answer all the questions and you do some research at the same time. And you start like collecting essentially feedback. So we started, you could only fund dollars, for example, USDC, which is a stable coin. And then first feedback is, okay, I don't want to fund only dollars. I want to send my Ethereum and my Bitcoin. That was like the first. And so, okay, now we got to build that. I want to fund from my bank account. We got to build that. I want more yield opportunities of this nature. How does this work? How does that work? This is too complicated type of deal. And so you keep on collecting that feedback and iterating day by day. And collecting data until the product gets really, really good. Yeah.
How did you know that those were the right things to work on and not just like a loud squeaky wheel? Like, how did you prioritize all these new things that you needed to build?
Yeah. So, you have two ways of doing it. Typically it's, you talk to enough people and you find patterns, so that's one. So if someone asks, I won't eat, and it's one person, you're not going to do it. But if you do 100 calls and 70 people ask for it, which it was the case for eat, it was an obvious one, then you're like, yeah, we need to build that. And then the second one is intuition. You don't, like for eat, you didn't need the 100 calls. We learned other things. It's obvious that you got to do that. It's a big cryptocurrency. People want to fund ETH and Bitcoin. Those are the biggest ones, and so on and so forth. So it's either you collect data, or you have a gut feel or intuition or product sense, or a combination of both. And it's important to know how to balance those out, actually, because if you're gonna wait to get 100 data points on everything you do, you're gonna move way too slow. If you operate everything on gut feel, you may make the wrong decisions. But it's good also to get a small data set and to then use intuition to draw a conclusion that you think is sensible. It may not be accurate, but it's most likely going to be accurate. It's a good hypothesis that you have, and you'll validate it more over time. Yeah.
That's good. Well, just in conclusion, what's one thing you would tell yourself now, maybe 2 years ago, beginning this product market fit journey again?
One thing I would do, it's less perfection, quote unquote. I wouldn't say perfection because we weren't, but more scrappiness. I'm quite scrappy, but I would tell myself even more. Like I was like on 8, 7, 8 on scrappiness. I would like go to 9, 9.5. You can, it's worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you mean scrappy, it means like getting the core thing out the door, even though it's not perfect. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yes, that's right. So you can't get perfection. That was the wrong word. It's like get the 80% thing out the door, or the 70% thing out the door. It doesn't need to be at 90 or 100%. Getting the learning faster is way more important than than like having it at 90 or 100%. Yeah.
That is a good word right there. Thank you for listening. If you want to learn more about Zendesk for Startups, check out our website, zendesk.com/startups. Also, we're always looking to improve, so don't hesitate to email me with any feedback on how we can ask better questions, guess the target, or anything else that we can do to better help you as a founder. My email is adam.odonnell@zendesk.com.